I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's show is brought to you by Amazing FBA's mentoring program. So I'm kind of sponsoring my own show. I just wanted to briefly tell you about the mentoring program because it's about to go away at its current price point and in its current form. The mentoring program is there very simply to get you launched, like pretty much everything I do for the more, you know, early days sellers, apart from the 10K Collective, which is obviously for people doing very, very well and ambitious to scale. Everything else I do is really geared to helping you get launched with your first private label product within probably 6 months, maybe 9 months if you're really busy and have other projects on the go. So if you want to work with me for £300 a month for two 90-minute sessions plus email support, that is the current offer. I'm going to take one more person on, maximum two, if the other candidate is really, really special and looks like a really great person is going to succeed. Either that or by the end of June, one of those, whichever comes first, then after that, I'm going to yank the mentoring program at that price point. And when it goes back up, it's going to be part of a bigger, more powerful package, including an online course, which I'm very excited about. And it's going to be at least £500 a month, probably more, because I'm putting a higher value on my time because I realize opportunity cost is a real cost. And hopefully you realize that as well. So if you value your time, there are three things you need to have to even apply for mentoring. You need at least £5,000 in inventory money. That's not to cover your training costs with me. That's additional, but just for inventory, 20 hours a week to devote to building a business and 6 months of your time to devote to it as well. Otherwise, I think you're just wasting your time and I won't take you on because I don't want to take your money for the sake of it. I want to take your money only in exchange for great value and you creating your business, finally getting off the ground. So amazingfba.com/mentoring if that interests you. Otherwise, on with the show. Thanks for listening.
Ladles and jelly spoons, welcome back to the show. This is Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. And today I've got my wonderful business partner and very, very clever photographer on the show, Rob Sleeth. So Rob, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. So it's great to talk this stuff through with you because even though we have a lot of conversations about all sorts of different aspects of Amazon, including, of course, photography, but there's still a great deal that I'm learning from you here. So there's obviously tons for other Amazon sellers to learn. So I'd encourage you to not just skip over this. If you've been selling on Amazon for 2-3 years or done lots of money on Amazon, there's still stuff to learn. So first question, Rob, then we've talked about trying to do stuff yourself. Why is photography important and exactly why? Not just generally it's important. Mm-hmm. So tell us about how to choose a photographer, presuming that we're serious and we need to get decent photography done.
So photographers have lots of different specializations, and I think it's important to choose a photographer who understands the Amazon ecosystem. And I think it's important to choose a photographer who understands the relationship with customers that you want your product to have and how we're going to be representing your product. I think it's important to choose a photographer that ideally has experience in doing exactly what you want doing. So it's not new to them. It's something they've done before. It's something they've got experience in. They know what you want, even if you don't know what you want.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true, actually. I think most of the successful outsourcers that I've worked with have been brighter than me in the area that I'm outsourcing to them in any way. And they've kind of managed upwards, which is a polite way of saying, are you sure you want that? It's not really going to help you. So tell us a bit more about that.
So I think it's important to understand what you're trying to achieve with the photography. You're trying to achieve increased click-through rates on the search results page. You're trying to tell as much about the product as possible once the customer, potential customer, gets the product detail page. You're trying to answer any questions they might have. You're trying to tell them how big something is, what material it's made out of, what feature it has. And you're trying to do that visually as much as possible. You're trying to get ahead of any potential negative reviews you might get about quality or size or style or functionality. I mean, in an ideal world, there'll be very little that was only said in words. As much as possible would be said in the pictures and the words.
Yeah, with a listing. That makes sense, yeah. And I think also it's very, very important to highlight that even ourselves. I mean, next time you shop on Amazon, assuming you have an Amazon account, I challenge you to catch yourself in the act, because it's so damn quick. I mean, maybe I'm just more impatient than most, but I just scroll on my phone and then I'll look at some images. I might catch the fact that there's a certain average reviews, and I just about catch the fact that if it's 5-star average, I don't really care that much about the number of reviews, to be quite honest. With one, that's one obsession wiped out, and the price. And then I normally click add to cart. So if you don't tell people through your images something important, like there are only two of these in a pack, even though everyone else has three, or this really isn't to be used in water, or whatever it is, then people will not bother reading the word. So I really think I'd go further than what you just said and just say you absolutely have to get these sensors across in images and assume that people won't read the words, because in 2018, it's all about mobile now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the words are really hidden as well. You know, you have to make multiple clicks to get to the description or the features and details, I think it's called, on the mobile app. On the website, you've got to scroll down and kind of somewhere between sponsored and related products, there's a description there, which is normally horribly formatted and it's just a copy paste of the bullet points. Whereas the pictures are front and center. So that's the place you've got to tell your story, to show your story. Really show people the product doing the task they want to do with it. You know, if you're selling a product that has multiple uses and you only highlight one of those in the pictures, people might miss the fact that it has these other uses. They might completely skip over it, for example. You know, they might see something for, I don't know, a tent. Let's say a tent, right? They might see a tent which is for camping in, and they might think, oh, I don't want one for camping in. I want one for sitting in on the beach that has an open front. And if you don't show a picture of that, they're going to skip right over it and find one that does have a picture showing the feature that they want.
That's a very good point. So that brings us directly to the question of relationship between, I suppose, market research and photography. In other words, what do the customers want and how do we get that across? Now, traditionally, people obsess over reviews and then put that into their bullet points and craft great bullet points and wonderful descriptions. Now, from what we've just been saying, which I think is true and getting more true, is that people skip over the words. So how do you go from an insight, or what you think is an insight about customers, if you're new to a market, for example, based on the competition's reviews and what seems to be selling and what you put in the photography?
So the first thing to say about people obsessing about the reviews and the details and so on like that is, for a lot of people, that's the only tool that they have. They forget that they have the tool of photography to tell these images, to tell these stories. You know, what's the saying? If the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. For a lot of people, the only tool that they have is the words. They don't even think that, oh, I could tell that better with the pictures. So if you want to tell the story properly with the pictures, you need to look at all your competitor products, look at all the pictures that they have, go through all of the positive and, most importantly, the negative reviews of your product and all of your customers' products. Find out what misconceptions people have. Look at the questions that have been asked. The questions are an absolute goldmine for informing what you should be showing in your photos. Does this have this? How big is it? Can I do this? Is this a 2-pack or a 10-pack? What color blue is it? You know, those are where you should be drawing up your list of questions to be answered. And from there, you should be working out how to answer those questions in every way possible, including photography.
That makes a lot of sense. And by the way, thank you for the tip on the questions. You're quite right, because if you've got a smaller traffic listing, you might only have one or two questions. But if your competition has a lot of traffic, quite often they'll end up with 8, 10, 12 questions. And actually, the more valuable and technical the product is, I recently bought a MacBook Pro on Amazon, for example. There's all sorts of questions that generally get asked with a high value and technical question. Which brings us to a whole different set of questions, really, you know, because I'm buying something based on the brand off Amazon, but I'm still wanting to get reassured by the photos. But let's bring it back to somebody who's starting out, or who is wanting to do things at scale and is wanting to keep an eye on their costs. And let's face it, cash flow is always a challenge for any business, but particularly an inventory-based business, right? So there is a price pressure. I'm asking a leading question of a professional photographer, but why tell me, how do I justify spending whatever, £250, £300 or whatever it is on basic photography or more for some amazing stuff versus going to Fiverr.com and finding somebody, you know, moderately competent for $50?
Go on Fiverr, have a look. I doubt you'll find anybody. The services that you find for $50 or less in some cases are for like one photo that isn't done very well on a white background. And as soon as you add on all of the upsells, you know, all of the little bits, the price goes up quite quickly. I don't actually think there's anybody who does a good job of this doing it stupidly cheap. I went on Fiverr to have a look, sort of see what kind of things people are doing. And nobody is doing it for a fiver. They're really not. So I think that's a non-starter, first off. I think that costs don't exist in a vacuum. And you should compare any costs you're spending on photography with costs that you might spend elsewhere. If you're doing tons of giveaways, for instance, you've got the product costs, you've got your FBA costs, you've got, you know, the money that you're paying to the giveaway service that you've got to bear. So those should be factored in as well. If you're spending money on PPC, you know, you're spending a dollar or two, a pound or two per unit, once all said and done, you know, you might think, oh, I'm only spending 10, 20 pence a click. But once you actually work your rates out, it's often close to a pound or two per unit. Really, how many of those have you got to get through before you think, actually, I would have been better off trying to increase my conversion rate, trying to increase my click-through rate in a more sustainable way that I own, like the photos? Because once you've got the photos, you can reuse them a lot and you can build on what you've got as well. You might start out with one really great white background photo as your main image. And then you might go back to the photographer and say, hey, I'd like some more photos doing. I'd like some other angles, or I'd like some different themed photos for different times of year. Or I'd like you to, you know, try and recolor the image to say something different, or I'd like you to do infographics, or I'd like you to do it with a model or with props or so on. But I think just getting that one image right that is your main image that gets people to click is so, so important. So if you're on a budget, that is what I'd recommend. Just get that one picture right and revisit the others later.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I was just thinking about the whole, it's amazing how much there is to discuss on this subject. It's a funny thing that it sounds really naive, but I thought, well, we're going to get Rob on to talk about photography. And, you know, Rob's a very analytical and articulate guy, so that'll be an interesting episode. But I guess it'll be over in 30 minutes because it's just a few images, right? And of course, that's complete nonsense, but I fall into the same trap as everyone else, which is underestimate just how much goes into this. So let's bring it back to very, very basics then. If you're going to spend money on where it matters, the 80-20, I guess, is going to be the main image, right? Because it gets people to click through to the listing, without which you can't get a sale. So that's one sort of gateway to the sale that we've got to open. So tell us about main image. What are the main aspects of a main image that are going to lead to ultimately more sales and more profits?
So your main image, most people think that you're quite restricted on what you do. It's got to have a white background. The product's got to fill at least 80% of the field. And I think that the current resolution that they want is up to 2,000 pixels. So you should be using that. Ideally, you take your picture in a much higher resolution and make that available in case sort of things change in future. If you're on mobile, it's much better to have a tall and thin image than a wide and flat image, because most people use phones in a sort of portrait orientation. Yep. And so exactly, the picture will display bigger if it's portrait. So if you've got a product, you need to answer as many questions as quickly and as simply as possible, using as much of the image area as possible. And I think that you should have a look at your competitor products and see what they're doing and see which ones you're naturally drawn to. And you might not know why you're naturally drawn to them, but I bet if we sat down and went through and made a list, we could figure it out what it is that's causing you to click on those images and select those versus others.
So you just talked about sitting down and saying, I bet we, do you mean we as in the seller should sit down almost like use a photographer as an image consultant before actually getting shots done? Is that what you're implying?
I think a huge amount of doing the photography is more than just putting something in a white box and pressing a button. I think it's about working out the questions that you're trying to answer, the story that you're trying to tell, thing that you're trying to present to the customers, what customers you are trying to encourage to purchase your product and what customers you're trying to discourage from purchasing your product. And I think that if you have an idea about what you want the photo to be, then that's great. I think that if you think that you know exactly what the photo should be like, you might be right, but you might not. So I think that it's important to talk to somebody or spend months learning yourself what makes a good product photo. Because what makes a good product photo for one kind of product, for a set of cutlery, for instance, is not going to be the same as for a diary. It's not going to be the same as for an electrical lamp or for a garden rake. These are all going to require different questions to be answered.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, again, it sounds so obvious now you say it, but really, I guess partly this is where I maybe underestimate my own ability. Ability sounds too strong, but my own, you know, experience, shall we say, that I have certain amount of a sense of what a photograph needs to do on Amazon because of selling on Amazon, because of consulting with other people and spending ages looking at their photos and going, that's not so good. That's good. I suppose in a way I've been a less than totally expert image consultant, but I know some of the basics. But actually, especially for somebody starting out, I think what you've just pointed out is that a photographer's eye is what you're coming down to. But also, if you get that person and you are unusual in this aspect, I think that because you specialize in photography such to the point that you are really serious and you know what you're doing in that field, but also a lot of online e-commerce selling specifically on Amazon.
Yeah.
Really having that eye and the understanding of the process is almost what you're hiring as much as somebody's ability to just press the shutter, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so much more than the technical abilities of, you know, setting up some lights and putting an object in front of a camera. It's about working out how you're going to present that product. I think a really good example of this is go on eBay and search for some popular product. Search for a Barbie doll, for instance, and look at the completed listings. And you'll notice some people have got a Barbie doll. Let's say it's new in box. So they're really interchangeable, these items. It doesn't matter who you buy from. You're getting a new in box Barbie doll. Some people will have used the listing photos from the manufacturer's own website. Some of them might have taken photos from Amazon or from other e-commerce sites. Some of them will have just chucked the Barbie doll on the carpet and taken a picture. Some of them will have reflections off the box. So you can't really clearly see which Barbie doll it is and which clothes it's got and so on. Some people will photograph every side of the box. Some people will just do one picture. Some of them might be low resolution. Now, these products really should sell identically because they are identical products. But if you look at the prices that they achieved and whether they even sold or not, you're going to notice that the ones with the good pictures are the ones that got the sales.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like that because it's a very A-B comparison. You can really look at some, as you say, you're about the data with your scientific mm-hmm. background. So you can actually look at data, but in a place where you can see it, which is one of the problems with Amazon, isn't it? We can't really measure a lot of things because Amazon just doesn't share that with us. Whereas on eBay, it's more transparent. There's more variability. So actually, that's a fascinating experiment, actually. Just if you really, by now, aren't convinced to go on eBay and just see that photography does matter. So let's assume that people are now convinced that it does matter and that they realize also that a good photographer not only is going to take good shots, but actually they're a good image consultant, which kind of implies something about how to work with photographers. But that's my next natural question is, okay, so I've found somebody who I think is a really good photographer specifically for products, mm-hmm. specifically for e-commerce, which is a further subset, and very, very specifically for Amazon. I guess such people don't grow on trees, which is why we've got you on the show. But how do I start? What's the next thing to do in terms of how I work with that person? Is there a sort of process? Are there a do's and don'ts that are common across the ground?
So ideally, you'd already have a product that you want to sell. It sounds obvious, but it might not be. You can't photograph something if it doesn't exist. People do 3D renders and things. That's against Amazon's terms and conditions. And again, I think it's a misrepresentation of the product because things never look quite the same in real life as they do in a 3D render. So you have your product. and you'd be as open with the photographer, with the consultant, the image stylist, whatever you want to think of them as possible. You would say, this is my product. This is the price I'm hoping to achieve for it. This is how I've developed the product to solve my customer's problem. These are the problems I think they have. These are my competitor products. You'd be as open as possible to taking their input. You might have a mood board, you know, a style, a collection of things that you like and things that you don't like, inspirations, and you can work together to develop a visual brand storytelling style to help sell the product. You know, there are many products that could be sold in very different ways. You could have a leather bag, for instance, which is sold to women with some beautiful sort of Parisian lifestyle imagery, and is sold to men with tools in it. And, you know, it's almost like a hold all kind of thing, and it's on a building site and stuff. And really, that could be the same product underneath. So I think really about trying to build this into your brand as a whole is important. Trying to have some ideas, but to be open to taking on expert opinion is fantastic.
Excellent. All right. So being able to expert opinion, that makes a lot of sense. So let's assume that I have, think of some concrete examples, because I always find that examples bring through the processes more clear than anything else. Let's say I'm being very brave / foolhardy, and I'm going to sell this lovely black nondescript looking, well, I bought it after all, this black nondescript looking iPhone 6S Plus thing, which I take it out of its holster and sound like I'm using a gun metaphor here. Yeah. The case, yeah, iPhone case. So it's there. It's called Survivor by Griffin, just to reveal it. So if you're getting a tiny boost in sales Survivor, you can send me a cup of tea. So they've got a brand in the sense that it's called Survivor, and Griffin is obviously the brand as a whole, and Survivor's the brand for this. And they've actually bothered to put their logo, I just noticed, inside it where you can't see it, which is certainly sad. And I think for them, I feel a bit sad already. So this is quite it's matte black, it's made of plastic, it's quite nondescript. And imagine that I bring this to you and I say, okay, I'm thinking of selling this for about, what did I pay this for, £20 in a shop. So let's say I want to sell it online for £10. Over to you, what would you do with this thing?
The first thing I'd do is I'd do a competitive analysis. I would find all the other products that are similar that a customer might buy if they don't buy yours. I would try and understand what motivated them to buy those products. And I'd try and make sure that your product meets those motivations head on, that it answers any questions that they might have. So as you're waving that around, I noticed that Survivor bit at the bottom shows in certain light and certain angles and doesn't show at other angles. So I'd want to make sure that the customer knew. Exactly, yeah. So I'd want to make sure that the customer knew that that was branded there. I'd want to make sure they knew whether the product was sort of a grippy, non-slip kind of finish, or whether it's more of a glossy sort of lacquered finish. You say it's for a 6S Plus?
Yeah.
I mean, I was with a friend a couple of months back, and she had a 6S, and she ended up buying 6S Plus cases by accident because the way the listing was set up, it wasn't clear what it was for. So I'd really want to make clear that as well. I'd want to highlight any features of it. You know, if it wraps around to the front so you can lie the phone face down and the screen is protected still if it's lifted up a millimeter or so, if the corners are reinforced, how the product is packaged, if it's packaged suitable to be a gift, if it comes with any extras. Normally phone cases come with a screen protector or two. Sometimes the screen protectors themselves come with like application instructions and wipes and tools and things to make sure it goes well. So I'd really want to showcase the product at its best.
Wow. Okay. So there's actually quite a lot going on with this thing. So highlighting any features, for example, screen protector as well, which I could have done with actually. I have to say that just to confuse the issue, I bought this in a retail shop, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't be something that you'd buy online. In fact, I'm quite surprised that I did. I think it's just one of those things of I broke the previous one, I've got to get one quickly. So
I did exactly the same. I bought mine.
It hadn't occurred to me until now that actually these guys have missed out on a branding opportunity. Because Survivor, I quite like the font they've used, just to show you that again, that I quite like the font and the kind of look and feel of it that they've created. But actually, it's very, very hard to see in any light. It just looks like it's just purely unbranded thing. And actually, even the sort of branding they've done in terms of there's a little sort of neat, it doesn't really add anything to the functionality, but this sort of stuff around the edges. I think if I were doing this, I'd be considering, now you've said that, I'd think, you know what, that isn't going to photograph very well. What about putting that in white? And then I'd maybe even look to the photographer and the producers of it and say, okay, how much extra is it going to be for me to pick out the lettering in white and then to sort of have this piping thing in white as opposed to gray? And then maybe take an iPhone shot and send it to my photographer and say, right, you know, or even get my supplier to just do the same, you know, mock something up for me, send me a photo and go, right, does this, do you think this is going to really have an impact? And how well are you going to be able to photograph that? I mean, is that a sort of way that you would work, or is that too cumbersome, or does that sound like the sort of thing we need to do these days?
No, I definitely think that's important. I think it needs to be an end-to-end process. I don't think the photography starts and stops as the camera shutter opens and closes. I think that planning how something is going to be represented online and making sure that it helps overall. Because as I say, we could take photos in such a way that the product would sell like hotcakes. It would completely sell out at a silly price overnight. But if the customers are disappointed with it because it's not what they were expecting, you're going to get a load of returns. So the photography needs to be right. There are pictures of products out there where they don't look anything like as good as the real thing. And there are pictures of products out there where they look far better than the real thing. There are questions to, you know, ideally nobody would have any questions on the Amazon system, but we know that almost every listing does have questions on it. And in terms of product development as well, that the photos are a great way of split testing something, of comparing, you know, two different products together. Yeah, I think that it has to be sort of a holistic approach, basically.
Yeah. So what I'm almost getting a vision of now, and it's, again, this is, I mean, I'm the person interviewing and I know you well, and we've been working together on Amazon businesses together, but even so, it hadn't occurred to me. So I imagine it hasn't occurred to most people that really what we're talking about is, and again, it comes down to team, doesn't it? Not trying to be great at all things on your own, but be the person in the middle creating a business and being good at pulling together expertise rather than trying to be the expert, which is that you kind of want the photography to be your an image consultant, and you want to work in tandem with them to develop the product such that at the end of the process of manufacturing, you've got something that's going to look gorgeous in photos rather than start with an object and then take it to the photographer. For example, these guys, Griffin, and that's what's particularly struck me. That's why concrete examples, you're always going to learn more by doing. And the second best thing is case study in my experience, because this one, as soon as you mentioned that about you can't really see the thing, I'm like, yeah, you're right. And actually, I wonder how much it would cost to put white, sort of fill in those letters with white or green or whatever, and which would photograph better. And then it comes down to brand identity as well. And then I could go back to the manufacturer and say, okay, mock one up and give me a price. And then I could show it to you and go, is it worth it? And then it actually, as you said, it becomes a whole story. But what I'm saying that feels different to anything I've ever heard or even thought is the photographer can really be part of the product development process from the beginning. Because actually, as we discussed in our previous episode, people don't buy products, they buy images of products, right?
Exactly. So you know, if it's not going to be in the product, if it's not going to be in the photos, what's the point in having it in the product in some ways? Yeah. So, you know, a photographer might say, oh, if we move this bit to here, if we change that, if we highlight this, it'll photograph better and it'll help it sell better. Those little lines on that phone case, for instance. So I have a lingering question about that, which is, are they thinner, different bits of plastic to allow the phone signal to get through the case? Or are they just random detailing?
Actually, funnily enough, if you look inside it, and like if you're watching the video, you'll see this more easily, that it does look thinner at that point, and maybe it is a way to allow the signal to get in, which is not something I've thought about. Because I guess the antenna in an iPhone is around the edge, isn't it? It's right around the edge of it. So I think you might well be correct, in which case they've dealt with a certain sort of elegant look, which goes with a physical necessity to some degree. But actually, I think it is mostly about the styling. So it's kind of, yeah, I think looking at it, there are bits where it's thinner when it's not like that color and bits where it is that color. So I think it's a funny combination of the two. But that doesn't affect the fact that they could have made a feature of that or hidden it better. But they're kind of in betweeny with this look.
Exactly. And I think that highlighting your features is really important. So you had a guest on a few months back who had developed a product which was for children, and he had developed a character to be shown on that product, but the pictures didn't clearly show the character. So I think it was a backpack or a pram or something like this, a baby carrier or some product like that. And I think he had an elephant, which was emblazoned all over it. And he got a lot of returns. He got a lot of complaints because that character wasn't represented properly in the listing. So, you know, if it worked with an image consultant who'd been given the product and told to come up with some ideas and work out what features to highlight, that might have been one of the things they picked up on. They might have looked at the pictures that he selected and said, hey, wait a second, there's some things missing here. We've got this very obvious elephant character, which is not being shown in any of the pictures. And this seller, I remember, is quite a well-respected, big-name seller. And the fact that he'd missed this detail just shows that when you've got so much going on, it's important to have another pair of eyes on these things.
Yeah, definitely true. So let's talk now. Let's widen widen. I don't know if it's widening the conversation, but let's talk about the other options that you've been sort of tantalizing us with. You mentioned split testing. Let's come back to that. You mentioned also seasonal photography. Tell us a little bit more about that. Do you think that matters very much? And if so, what are the options for dealing with that elegantly rather than you making it messy and difficult?
I think that anything that can give you the edge over your competitors helps. If you show a product wrapped up nicely in gift wrap paper under a Christmas tree, it's just going to trigger some little thing in people's minds that says, oh yeah, I could buy this as a present. Just a tiny, if you show it with a, you know, you can't do this in the main image, right? Unless you sort of work very hard to stay within the guidelines. But on the subsequent images, the lifestyle images, you can do a lot more interesting things. You can put infographic sort of text overlays on. You can highlight features and details. You could put little hearts on the picture. You could put great for Father's Day on it. You know, you could put it with a picture of a greetings card that had the greeting on that you want. You could do different language ones. You could, yeah, do seasonal ones. You could say that this product is, you know, this isn't just an orange bucket. This is a Halloween candy bucket, you know?
All right. So let's talk about that, because some products are naturally seasonal. And I guess you're going to really, if you're selling Halloween stuff, and I had a person in the, I'm trying to think what to call him, a member of the 10K Collective who was selling actually just wholesaling a Halloween thing, which always strikes me as incredibly risky because you probably get a window of about a week to sell the thing. And he managed to do some incredible stuff with influencer marketing and end up with it on the Jonathan Ross show and sell through most of his inventory. So he did really well. But that's an example of something that's very, very specific. So I guess all your photography is going to be focused on Halloween, right? But let's assume you have a product that could be gifted at Christmas. And let's face it, most stuff goes crazy in Q4, even random things that you wouldn't expect, like Zovirax for you know, cold sores, right? And just random stuff that isn't very giftable, in my opinion. Yeah. Is, in fact, it seems. So let's assume Q4 is a given that you're going to want to show things under a Christmas tree and wrapping paper, as you just said. Great idea. But what about other things that are more, that are valuable, like 4th of July, Mother's Day, Father's Day, fantastic in certain giftable sectors. Valentine's Day obviously can be huge in certain sectors.
Absolutely. So
how do we deal with that without having to send our products to a photographer, you know, six times a year and ending up with monster costs or just a real hassle because we're trying to do that with 10, 20, 50 different SKUs?
You could leave the product with the photographer and come, you know, say you just put this in storage, come back to it later. We might want to do some more photos. You could photograph it in such a way that it can be composited into certain pictures that, you know, maybe this product wasn't really on the table next to the barbecue on somebody's Labor Day weekend picture, but you could sort of present it in such a way by some good little Photoshop trickery. You could take some pictures in advance. This might not be something that you do in year one. This might not even be something that you do in year two. This might be something that you think, well, let's highlight a few holidays here and let's plan this, you know, build up our catalog of pictures over time, maybe every year adding on a few new images, highlighting some new features. Maybe, you know, you might think, well, I've got all of the public holidays and features and things covered for the UK market, but maybe there's Bastille Day or something you want to take some pictures for your French listing, or some specifically German looking images. Because from just a picture of a living room, it's really sometimes quite possible to tell what nationality a picture is. And if you are presenting a very Spanish looking room, and that's where you've done your photos, and you're trying to sell that into the English market, there might be a bit of a mismatch there. So, you know, you can niche down as much as you want, and it doesn't have to be as complicated as taking lots and lots of pictures lots and lots of times. If you create reusable assets, templates that can be little things swapped in and out, whether that be bits of text or whether that be an item photographed on a green screen and cut out and inserted into things, you can really build up a good bank of images that you can cycle through, keep things fresh, split test them. You can really do some good stuff.
Amazing. So let's talk about specifically, we talked about the general idea of seasonal, and you're starting to touch on other options. So we've talked about split testing. Let's deal with that first. So have you got any tips on split testing? Obviously, you're not the person who runs the split testing software, but as a person on the other side of that, as, and also as an Amazon seller yourself, what are your tips around split testing images?
Never trust your assumptions, really. You might not be right. Even somebody who's been doing this a very long time, if they just refuse to split test and just say, oh, I'm not even going to bother split testing, this is definitely the best way of presenting it. You need to sort of be a bit more humble than that, I think, and be really open and willing to split test stuff. Yeah, move your images around, change the order, change whichever the second image is, change the first image if you dare. But definitely you should be split testing all the time. Something or other should always be running a test using some of these bits of software. And people often do, and they change the title and the keywords and the bullets, but people rarely split test the photos.
Yeah, that's true.
Change the photos, see how it affects lots of different factors. See how it affects your return rate. See how it affects your review rating, your questions that you get asked. Those are the real things. Maybe your product is very similar to everybody else's out there. Maybe you think, well, everybody else is using a very similar view of this picture, of this product, so that's obviously the best one to use. Maybe in isolation, it is the best one to use, but maybe just by making yours different from the others on that search results page, by highlighting that one different feature you've got, that might actually increase your click-through rate and your sales.
Yeah, highlighting different features a great deal of sense in that. I think, I mean, that's one thing that I was talking to Chris Rawlings, I should say, about the other day. He was just basically saying, well, when he's developing a product, he looks at developing the one feature that everyone else doesn't have, but that the market seems to want. And then he said, and just bring all your marketing collateral to bear and hammer on that feature. So obviously, one of the major things we have to bring to bear there is the images. And as you said, I like the fact that, you know, be humble, don't assume that you know what people want. And there are all sorts of examples. And when somebody was posting up on my Facebook group the other day, if you want to join that, by the way, amazingfba.com/FB, F face and B for book. But somebody was just saying that they'd had somebody split testing the price on their products, and they could discover that there was pretty much no change in the sales when they put the price up by about $10 on a sort of $20 product, which is kind of crazy because, of course, massively more profitable now. So that just goes to show that intuition is a bad guide. And I think you're right with the images thing as well. It's the same as anything else. And people are less likely to split test images. You're right. I mean, I tend not to because it feels a tiny bit more fiddly or something. But actually, I guess this is as easy to split test as anything else, right? So let's talk about, we talked about seasonal stuff. You've also talked about text and infographics, I guess, comes into that. Tell us a bit more about how you would use that to improve conversions, profitability, sales.
So just because you only get 7 or 8 image slots doesn't mean you can only put 7 or 8 images in there. You could do composite images where it actually has a few different views of the product in one, or it shows it in a multi-pack, for instance, so that it, you know, it suggests to people that they upsell themselves and buy more. You can have little zoomed in areas that show that, oh, this is a durable waterproof fabric, and have some little water droplets on the fabric, for instance. You could highlight features in different languages as well. One of the most interesting tricks I've come across is Germans have a really good reputation for quality, right? So actually by putting German text on even non-German listings, you can really work some magic there if people think, oh, well, you know, this is a German quality product. It kind of spills over quite nicely. But it's important to try and match the market as much as possible. So the things that German people care about, things that French people and English people care about might be slightly different to what Americans care about. You know, an American might want a massive barbecue grill for grilling sort of lots of food for the Labor Day weekend, and a British person in their tiny houses might want to be told that, oh, this barbecue folds down quite small and it'll fit in your minuscule shed in the garden. So you need to tell a different story, even if it's about the same products, depending on the marketplace you're presenting to. And as much as you can do that through pictures, it doesn't hurt to show and tell. It doesn't hurt to have some bullet points in there, have, you know, little lines drawn across your picture with little dots that show a particular feature, and say, oh, this layer is made out of a non-scratch coating and underneath there's an insulating layer and then inside there's a something else, you know, and we've got whatever it is, you know, the wheels on this are, the bearings on them are really good, and here's a exploded diagram view of the kind of bearings that you have on this suitcase. So that this bearing, for instance, that I've just made up off the top of my head, you might, as an end consumer, you might never see this. It's hidden deep inside the product. But if you draw out that, no, this has really quiet, long-lasting bearings, it's not going to squeak, you might think, okay, well, that is the suitcase for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And actually, yeah, funny enough, I might be a candidate for that. As soon as you said that, I'm visions of leaving the house with my wife at 6 a.m. to go and get a flat. And we're going down the street and there's this sort of rumble that sounds a bit like a taxiing 747 going to take off. And I realize it's my wife's suitcase. So yeah. You're right. Sometimes it does come down to very specific details that I might be even embarrassed to admit to somebody else why I would buy a suitcase based on the fact that it's quiet, because it sounds so naff. But actually, sometimes it is the little, you know, details that make the difference. And that's an example for me as of a market, of a person in a certain market with a particular hang-up, if you like, that you would speak to with that detail.
Exactly. And it's not to say that this product is necessarily superior to the competition. They might be exactly the same product, but if you've highlighted this feature and they haven't, or if you've highlighted this feature and they've highlighted something else, if that is what the customer is looking for, that's the one they're going to buy. If you highlight 10 features that are brilliant features, but all your customers actually don't care about those 10 features, they care about something else, it doesn't matter. It's not just about putting something on a white background and snapping a picture. It's really about trying to optimize a holistic view of your product, of your conversion rate, of getting in front of the right customers and making them confident that they've made the right decision by choosing your product.
Sounds like wise words. I mean, just a couple of things on the back of that, which I think is more or less, in a way, I'm asking the question you've just answered, but let's expand on this slightly in our remaining minutes together. So first of all, how do we differentiate our products from the Chinese suppliers, photos? There's lots and lots of Chinese suppliers going direct to Amazon, especially Amazon.com now. And they have, as Chris Rawlings put it, he was out in China the whole time now, but as an American seller originally himself. So he said there's a whole sub industry, a whole ecosystem, he put it, of people who do product photography there. Mm-hmm. So how do we make our photographs stand out? And if it's included, what about lifestyle shots and models?
Some of those photographers over in China might well be very good. Some of them might not be. Some of them might be very good photographers, but not very good visual merchandisers. One thing I've learned about China is that for them, if it looks right, then it is right. But from a customer that actually gets a product in their hands, it's not about that. It's about if the product is a good match for the item which I chose online. It really, the accuracy is key there. As a consumer, you can't necessarily know whether you're making the right choice if you're buying from a picture which might not be accurate. And the same is true as a photography buyer. So if you're developing a product yourself and you're thinking, oh, well, I'll just use some Chinese guy to do it, it's very hard for you to know whether you've picked a good Chinese guy or not a good Chinese guy. If they don't have a track record of helping and working with their partners to do right by their partner's customers, you might get lucky, you might not. You're taking a gamble there. And I really think it's important to try and work with somebody who has been there before and has done that and really wants your business to succeed and wants you to come back to them for more pictures and for their next product, who's not just, oh, well, I'll get my little bit of money for this one picture and it won't be right, but I'll go on to the next guy.
Yeah. So in other words, you want a business, a partner in your business and your future success who who shares your vision for, you know, selling products that people like, I guess.
Exactly.
It's kind of obvious. But yeah, for the Chinese, I agree, this is not necessarily a given. So final questions then for the more advanced sellers or those with a bigger budget is really around lifestyle shots and models. I mean, is there a difference and is that important, first of all?
So this can be as simple or as complicated as you like, okay? So I really think it's important to recognize that you can really spend as much as you want on this. A photograph of a garlic press with some cloves of garlic on a chopping board, maybe not even showing a whole kitchen, is quite simple to achieve. But a photograph of some ski boots on a skier whilst they're doing a 360 spin in the air in the Alps is not going to cost the same amount to produce. It's not going to take the same abilities as taking that picture of the garlic press. So I think it's important to be realistic about what you're trying to achieve and have an open dialogue with the photographer. I think if somebody says, oh, I'll do you some lifestyle shots for this fixed amount, who knows what you're going to get? If your product, you're really trying to sell a brand and that brand requires certain props and those props are expensive, or if it requires a particular location, or if it requires tons of models versus just some guy's hand, the costs to those are going to be quite different. So there's a lot of conversations to be had there, I think, about how simple or complex you want it, whether you just want a lifestyle image or whether you want to sell a lifestyle. You know, whether it's more about branding and whether you want to show people, hey, our product will help you. You know, it's not just a wine cooler. It's a wine cooler that people use on yachts when they're having wonderful meals with their friends. I think a great example of this, some of my favorite product photography recently, is there's a lawn care company called Husqvarna, and they sell products for hedges and lawns and things like that. But if you look on their website, it's all like American dream style photos of a beautiful house, the white picket fence, and a barbecue going, and then this little robotic lawnmower in the corner. Taking pictures that are set up like that versus just taking some pictures of the product close up on a lawn, not extending beyond the green grass, are quite different prospects. So talk to the photographer and think about yourself what you're actually trying to achieve here, how much you're willing to invest in getting the kind of pictures you want.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's kind of a nice note on which to end things, because basically, I suppose what you're saying is think about the size of your vision and the brand that you're trying to produce, and then your photography budget and also the level of depth of your conversation with your photographer is going to reflect that. So makes a lot of sense. So it just remains for me to say, many, many thanks, Rob, for coming on the show, being revelatory even to me. And I say even, not because I'm so clever, but because I should know better by now. I should know more about photography and your personal thoughts on it than I do. So that's been surprisingly revelatory for me. I hope it's just as useful for the listeners as well. For those who wish to follow what you're doing or get more advice or see some of your work, Rob, where's the best place they can find out more about you?
So if you head over to mightyservices.co.uk, or you email me hi@mightyservices.co.uk, it'd be great to talk about your photography needs. If there's examples there of the kind of stuff you like, then we can probably do that. But even if there's not, if you've got some vision in mind, then I'm sure we can work with you to guide you on the right path.
Fantastic. So hi@mightyservices.co.uk.
That's right, yeah.
Great. So thanks very much, Rob, for coming on, letting us hear your Desert Island Discs, and for sharing so much extremely precise and scientifically driven marketing/marketing photography wisdom with us. So fantastic stuff. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Been a pleasure.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.